Welcome to the Jerusalem Post Podcast. I'm Yaakov Katz and joined as always by Lahav Harkovin. Lahav, this is a special edition of the Jerusalem Post Podcast because we're talking on the bank of the Thames River. The Thames.
Yeah, let me teach you about London. They don't like pronouncing the letter H.
Okay.
So it's also Tottenham.
Yes, well, Tottenham, I've heard. It's not, there's no A or E.
Okay, so, but definitely not pronouncing the H, and that's where we're going to be tomorrow. But right now, we are on the balcony of the House of Commons, overlooking the Thames and the London Eye, and we just stepped out of the gala opening of the Jerusalem Post conference in London, the first one in London.
First Jerusalem Post London conference, a very exciting, here to hail and celebrate British-Israeli relations, really said to be at a close point like never before under Boris Johnson and Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. Lots going on, whether it's Iran, Palestinians, trade, science, medicine, you name it. We just heard from Avigdor Lieberman, the Israeli finance minister, and a couple of lords, Lord Stuart Pollock, Lord Ian Austin, who's the Prime Minister of Britain's trade envoy to Israel. But before we get into the conference, which is really going to be very exciting, it's a full day of highlighting the battle against anti-Semitism, trade between the countries, challenges that Israel's facing, speeches from Ayelet Shaked, Yoaz Hendel, and more. We have a lot of terror. Terror is back on Israel's streets.
Yeah, it's not, we're not feeling very celebratory, even though we're here at this conference, because 11 people were killed in terrorist attacks, in three different terrorist attacks in Israel in the past. By the time this podcast will have come out, it'll be like 9 or 10 days. But it's more people that had been killed in a week in Israel since 2006. So it's bad.
And you know what I was thinking about today, Lahav, is how it's all over the country, right? It started in Beersheba in the south. It then struck in Chadera in the north. Then the other night in Bnei Brak in the center of the country. It's almost as if someone is saying, I want to wreak havoc. I want to spread terror. I want to scare people all over the country. So not just do it in one place.
It's also 1948 Israel, right? It's like they're not attacking settlements or settlers, quote unquote. They're attacking places that the international community at least recognizes as legitimate parts of Israel. But of course, these terrorists apparently do not.
Right. And we apologize if you're hearing some of that background noise, but we are at the House of Commons and House of Lords, and there are other people who are celebrating whatever they're celebrating here. So you'll bear with us. But Lahav, you know, one thing that struck me was that the night of the Bnei Brak attack, which led to 5 people dead, it was March 29th. March 29th is the 20th anniversary to when Operation Defensive Shield was launched 20 years ago. And that was the operation after the Park Hotel massacre, when 30 Israelis were killed in a suicide bombing on Seder night, Passover night, at the Park Hotel in Netanya. Israel decided to, enough was enough. It sent the IDF back into all of the West Bank cities to uproot and try to destroy and kill all Palestinian terrorists and infrastructure. Are we on the eve of something like that? Do you see the government of Naftali Bennett and Yair Lapid doing something along those lines?
It's hard to say. 2 out of the 3 terrorist attacks that just happened, the deadly terrorist attacks, were perpetrated by Israeli Arabs, one Bedouin or one pair of Bedouins and one pair from the north of Israel. And these are people who actually had ties to ISIS, and some of them had sat in prison for trying to join up with ISIS in Syria. So one of the things that they've done is try to sort of round up anyone who had past ties to ISIS. But if it's happening in Israel, you know, the call is coming from inside the house. You can't do a military operation. And so I think it's a challenge. I think that the old solutions are not what's going to work.
Right. Also, the rights of Israelis are different than the rights of Palestinians, right? What you can do to a Palestinian, you can't exactly do to an Israeli in that sense.
Yes and no, because we've seen with Jews who have killed Arabs that they put them in administrative detention, which basically means prison without a trial for long periods of time. If it's a security issue, then you can be in administrative detention even if you're a citizen. But you can't go into their towns with the army. That's a different thing.
Right, and that's a different thing. And I think that from what I'm hearing from some ministers that I've spoken to is that the focus is going to be on really trying to gather up and collect weapons. There, Ayelet Shaked, the Minister of Interior, has been talking to mayors of Arab towns to try to get them on board. So we're not going to see IDF troops deploying in Rahat, the Bedouin city in the south, or in Umm al-Fahim, the city in the north from where those two terrorists came who killed those two border policemen in Khadera the other night. But I think we will see a lot more police activity on the ground to try to collect those weapons, root out some of the crime that's in those cities. And it's time. I mean, this has to happen. The question, though, that I wonder, Lav, is Ram leader Mansour Abbas has been very strong in condemning these attacks. That's one thing. The moment you start to see real action against the Israeli Arabs, though, will this coalition survive that?
You know, I don't think Mansour Abbas is the issue, but I do think there are other Knesset members in his party, especially Waleed Taha, who have not been as enthusiastic about being in this coalition and would probably have more trouble supporting it if there's real action taken against a lot of Israeli Arab communities. I mean, I don't think it's going to be sweeping against Israeli Arabs, right? But there is a huge crime issue. There are a lot of illegal guns going around, and this is something we've known for years. So it'll definitely cause political tension. There's one more thing that I wanted to add, which you might not have noticed because it happened. You were probably already at this gala getting ready. That Prime Minister Bennett put out a statement saying that all Israelis who have guns should be carrying them outside now, and that everyone leaving an army base, whether it's a regular soldier or a reservist soldier, will have to bring their guns with them.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's going to be interesting. Force multiplier.
This is like what they spoke about back in 2015 when there was the so-called stabbing intifada. It was another thing that they were speaking about at the time. By the way, I've heard of number of 500,000 weapons in the Israeli Arab sector, illegal weapons that are out there. I mean, that's just astounding. But a lot of what I think is also fascinating, and you know, you and I have been covering Israel for a long time, so we're used to the rapid pace of news and how things change so quickly. But you were just in Sde Boker in the beginning of this week at that historic summit of Yair Lapid, the foreign minister, together with Secretary of State Blinken from the United States, meeting with four Arab foreign ministers. It seemed like we were opening a new era, right, in Israel, of peace, of summits, of regional stability, of new realignments, and then terror strikes again. I mean, it's so strange how we just move so quick.
I mean, you get whiplash from it, but like, you have to give, I don't know if credit's the right word, but there were plenty of people out there saying all along that even it's very good that Israel is making peace with more Arab states, but that doesn't solve the Palestinian problem. I don't know if this is a Palestinian problem as much as it's also an Israeli-Arab problem, right? But so perhaps a two-state solution won't even solve that if that's what ends up happening. But there's definitely a sense of whiplash. You know, this Negev summit was such an incredible thing. I mean, just seeing four Arab foreign ministers in Israel at all at this conference together with Yair Lapid and Secretary of State Blinken, and they were all standing together and saying, we have shared challenges and interests and we're going to tackle them together, foremost of which is Iran. Certainly, Lapid emphasized Iran a lot. Arab foreign ministers or Arab politicians in general tend to be more subtle about the specific challenge of Iran, but that was a big topic of conversation. But also energy is a big issue right now, especially in light of the sanctions on Russia. And also, you know, Israel is a natural gas giant now that is cooperating a lot with Egypt on that front. So it's just really amazing to see how the Abraham Accords are growing and also how it's bringing in Egypt, who we've had peace with for 43 years as of this week. This week was the anniversary. And it's turning the relations even more sort of normalized than they had been. So it was a beautiful thing. And our guest this week is Israel's ambassador to Bahrain, Eitan Naeh, to talk about what went on. He was in the room with the foreign minister. So we'll hear some of that soon.
So it's incredible, but that whiplash is so, it hurts, right? Because, you know, you think you're, we're coming off like this spate of summits. You had Isaac Herzog, the president, who went to Turkey to meet with President Erdogan. You had Bennett, who was in Sharm el-Sheikh, meeting with President Sisi of Egypt and the crown prince of the UAE, MBZ, Mohammed bin Zayed. Then this thing in the Negev, and then just terrorist attack after terrorist attack. And I think that this is going to be the big test of the Bennett government, right? This is what people are really going to remember at the end of the day. All that stuff is great. But at the end of the day, if I have to think about letting my kids out of the house, and if, God forbid, something will happen when they're hanging out at a restaurant or at a bar, or if I can walk through a street, not that my kids hang out at bars, but you know, you get, you know what I'm saying. this is what Israelis are going to really take with them to the next ballot. This is what will get them upset. It's not going to be the Negev summit or something else. It's this type of thing.
Yeah, I agree. Certainly, I mean, it's interesting to see how the attention in Israel, for example, is not on Ukraine at all anymore. And even, you know, someone very high up in Bennett's office, I asked them about some rumor I had heard about Bennett and Ukraine, and they were like, what are you talking about? We are not thinking about Ukraine mediating at all now. We are totally focused on this terrorist threat now. And that's how Israelis are going to feel. I mean, personal security or just security in general has always been the number one issue for Israelis. And when it feels threatened, then that, you know, that's everything is focused on that. It's going to be a political issue, but first and foremost, they're going to have to tamp it down in the security level.
And they'll have to get this, and I hope and pray that they're able to. The conference that we're here for in London, in this chilly evening that we're sitting outside now on the balcony of the House of Commons and House of Lords, you listeners will be able to watch it on the Jerusalem Post Facebook page. You'll be able to go to the Jerusalem Post Facebook page, catch our London conference. It's a conference that took place at the Tottenham Spurs. I hope I pronounced that right. Lahav, you can correct me if not. But the Tottenham Spurs Stadium, which is super cool. I was there the other day. High-tech, new, cool stadium. Lots of speakers, lots of sessions. Fight against anti-Semitism, Israeli-British relations, new technology, innovation, Jewish renewal, you name it. You'll be able to catch it on our Facebook page. We are in London for this, and you will get now our interview, the interview that Lahav actually did with Eitan Na'eh, the Israeli ambassador to Bahrain, who was at the Negev summit. Here we go.
So I'm here with Ambassador Eitan Na'eh, Israel's ambassador to Bahrain. And before that, he was briefly Israel's ambassador to the United Arab Emirates. So someone who really understands where things are going with the Abraham Accords. And we're talking just a few hours after the Negev summit, where the foreign ministers of Israel, Bahrain, the UAE, Egypt, and Morocco, and Secretary of State Antony Blinken all gathered. So welcome, Ambassador Na'eh. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Could you just tell our listeners what was so significant about this summit today?
The first time in our history, we have four Arab foreign ministers gathering in Israel, in Sde Boker, to talk about not just the relations between us, peace between us, but about regional issues and regional problems, and trying to devise, conceptualize solutions, ways to deal with it. I think that was outstanding.
And my understanding is that top of the agenda was defense issues pertaining to Iran, and Foreign Minister Lapid talked about a shared security or a joint security architecture. What does that mean?
First of all, I don't know if it's 50% or 40%. Of course, security is the main concern for our countries, and the events of last night show that the problem is multitude. It's not just Iran. It's terror. Each and every country that was present in the room has suffered from terrorism. And what we did was really part of the answer, the antidote to such. And it only emphasized the need to have a united policy, a united answer to such threats. And the way to do it is by sharing intelligence, sharing information, early warning systems, everything that can really help us detect a problem, detect a threat, and give it an answer.
You know, leading up to this conference, there were some tensions between Gulf states, especially the UAE and Saudi Arabia, and the United States. They were not happy with the U.S. response to attacks by the Iran-backed Houthi rebels on their land, on their energy infrastructure especially. They weren't taking President Biden's calls and other difficulties. And I know Israel sort of tried to get in the middle and to improve the ties. Do you think that this summit, in which Secretary of State Blinken participated and so did Foreign Minister of the UAE Abdullah bin Zayed, do you think that helped repair that relationship?
And talk obviously for the Americans, but I think that the summit have allowed for ample time for all foreign ministers to meet Antony Blinken. They had dinner together. They had one-on-one meetings with him. They sat together. You saw them together on the podium. So I think that the Secretary of State Antony Blinken had ample time to listen, to understand, to take in some of the things that were said, at least. And what he heard, I'm sure, was shared by a lot of the foreign ministers that he met and heard. So I would imagine that it was taken in.
Mm-hmm. And when one of Israel's complaints, the one that Israel has been most vocal about, is that the United States is considering removing the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps from the list of foreign terrorist organizations as a sort of side deal to the Iran nuclear deal. What was the discussion like about that issue?
Discussion wasn't that specific, or at least I'm not aware of it. But again, most of the concerns were shared by all participants. And I think that they were heard loud and clear. And that's my impression. Again, I'm not talking, not speaking for the Americans. Israel's views were made clear by a joint statement by the Prime Minister and the Foreign Minister. But the thing that when you come to Israel and you meet in Israel the foreign ministers of Egypt, Morocco, the UAE, and Bahrain, and you kind of hear similar concerns, I'm sure it does something. I'm sure it's a very clear message, and I'm sure that the message back was from the U.S. And we heard Antony Blinken talking from the podium with the press statement that the U.S. is here. The U.S. is here to stay. That it's fully committed. That it's going to work with its allies and partners in the region. And the thing that we all heard, for instance, the foreign minister of the United Arab Emirates thanking Antony Blinken for what he said. So again, my impression is that the summit helped in that way.
What do you think the objective was at the outset of the summit, and do you think that it succeeded in meeting that objective?
To be honest with you, the summit at least succeeded above and beyond my expectations. Whereas the actual holding such a summit and the four foreign ministers agreeing to come in such a short notice within the busy schedule to Israel, to Sdeboker, was incredible in itself. And then the opportunity to hear all of them voicing some of the very same issues. And it wasn't just security. It was, we spoke about economic prosperity and food security and other issues. So that was remarkable in itself. And then one could actually see that the kind of regional architecture of sorts is starting to be conceptualized. Needs still a lot of work, a lot of thinking. We have time, but we have started, and that's important. And as Foreign Minister Yair Lapid said, this is the first mega summit, so to be repeated each time in maybe a different capital, different country. So I think a first step and a first very, very important step and a very clear message.
Yeah, I also agree. I think it looked like a big success. It was a really great sort of show of force and of unity. There was one thing, though, which for Israel, this was not about the Palestinians. But everyone else who participated talked about the Palestinians in their public remarks. Was that a big issue that was brought up in the meetings? Is that awkward for Lapid, for Israel?
I don't think it was awkward. I think that the Palestinian issue is here with us, and it's not just one issue. When we talk about, sometimes we coin a term and we say the Palestinian issue, but the Palestinian issue is many things. The Palestinian issue is a solution to a long-term conflict. The Palestinian issue is economic prosperity, and the Palestinian issue is also food security and trade and commerce. And so the Palestinian issue is many things. And the Palestinians and many other countries in the region are welcome to the club, to this club. And part of the issues that other countries are dealing with in the region are shared by the Palestinians. So when one says the Palestinian issue, there are many issues, not just one issue. Of course, we refer to the Palestinian conflict, and that was raised, you're right. And it is part of our of what we're experiencing here. It is part of our life, and nobody forgot about it. And nobody is going to go away from the problem. It will take time. It's not going to happen tomorrow. But I'm sure that the problem will be addressed, is addressed.
Okay.
Let's wait and see.
Now let's talk about Israel-Bahrain relations. I know in the past when I interviewed Bahraini officials who were visiting Israel, they felt that they were maybe left behind a little bit, that all of the excitement was about the Emirates. How do you think things are catching up sort of since then?
I think they have caught up. We've signed during the conference the warm peace agreement, kind of a roadmap to warm relationships and to further deepening of the relationships. And that was achieved. I think that was the only agreement that was signed during this conference. Mm-hmm. We are showing progress in on many issues. I think that if you look next year on the trade balance between Israel and Bahrain, you'll see a big difference between last between next year and this year and last year. As we speak, there are delegations, trade delegations, heading to Bahrain. More trade, more business, more. R&D centers that are going to open, more Israeli companies that are thinking of opening up offices in Bahrain. And I've briefed on the way to Israel the foreign minister on the many topics and many trade issues that we have on the table. And I think that he was quite happy to hear that.
Well, what are the main areas of trade between Israel and Bahrain?
First of all, we import construction materials from Bahrain. We started with aluminium and we moved to other metals. It will be petrochemicals, high tech. Quite a few Israeli companies are considering opening a shop in Israel, whether it's R&D centers or moving it to Bahrain. One has to remember Bahrain is a small country, 1.5 million people, but is a gateway to the Gulf, a Gulf of 52 million people. So if an Israeli pharma company or Israeli Israeli manufacturing companies want to open a manufacturing unit, a factory in Bahrain, the potential customers are 52 million people. And that is something to be considered. And at least what I hear, what I see, and the number of delegations that are coming and started to come to Manama, quite a few Israeli companies are getting it. We had Arel Margalit, the
Jerusalem venture partner,
visiting Manama last week. A very thorough visit, meeting everybody from the finance minister to heads of funds, heads of development authorities, the wealth funds, young entrepreneurs, really kind of a deep going through the main players in the Bahraini, in Bahrain. And I think that that visit, for instance, gave both Arel Margalit and his partners and the Bahrainis a taste of the opportunities that Bahrain is. And there are other businessmen at the same time in Bahrain, businessmen and businesswomen. And the partnerships that are being created there, that I at least am a witness to, is not just between Israeli businessmen and Bahraini businessmen, but between Israeli businessmen and Palestinians and Egyptians, Jordanians, hopefully soon Saudis. So I'm sure that with time we'll see very interesting developments on trade and economic activity at large.
Mm-hmm. And then another sort of important element of Israel-Bahrain ties is that the U.S. Fifth Fleet is based there, right? The naval CENTCOM is there. And I understand that Israel is sending a naval officer to be stationed in Bahrain. Has that happened already?
It will happen soon. They're finalizing the bureaucratic, the paperwork that attached to such a thing of sending a military officer to a foreign country. It's happening. And it's exciting because, yes, Bahrain is home to the American Fifth Fleet, that's kind of a center of many coalitions in the Gulf, in the high seas, in the Gulf, in the Indian Ocean, in the Red Sea. And we see Israel taking part in joint training before, meeting military officers from many countries. Some of these coalitions are really, I think, up to 60 members. From Brazil to India, some of our Arab neighbors there, the Jordanians, others. Israel takes part in these exercises. Military officers have a chance to meet, address issues, talk about issues, challenges of cooperation in a changing environment. So, it's again another exciting area where defense, economics, meet, and see that there is much to talk about and much to do to create a better place.
And another really unique thing about Bahrain is that it's the only country in the Gulf that has a long-standing Jewish community and a synagogue that's more than a few years old. So what's the connection been like with that community?
You're right. The Bahraini Jewish community is originally from Iraq. They came to Bahrain or moved to Bahrain mainly from Iraq, but also from Iran at the turn of the 19th century, in the 1880s. The majority moved to Israel, to the UK, to the US. But there are a few dozens of Jews that remained in Bahrain. And what I find time and again is how deep-rooted they are and how well accepted they are by the wider Bahraini community. The friendships, the family ties between Bahrainis and Jews, even Jews that left Bahrain, and the attachment between those who used to live in Bahrain, born in Bahrain, and left Bahrain, whether to the U.S. or to Israel. And yes, the synagogue was opened there in 1935, it's still functioning. We had Purim, reading of the Megillah. Passover is upon us. We'll have a stay there in Manama, at the house of one of the Jewish families in Bahrain. So yes, a full Jewish cycle. We celebrated the wedding last summer or autumn. Jewish life thrive in Bahrain.
So I want to ask you about something else. Our listeners might not be aware that you used to be Israel's ambassador to Turkey. And you were sent back to Israel. Turkey sent you back to Israel after former President Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and there was rioting among Palestinians. And I guess I want to know what your impressions are about this sort of rapprochement that's going on between Israel and Turkey right now. Israel seems to be taking it slow. So what do you think about what's been going on?
Look, my main remit now is really Israel-Bahrain.
Yeah.
I can tell you from my experience, though, that Turkey is big and important country. And anything that will improve Israel-Turkey relationships will be a welcome development. But as it is and as it stands now, I'm the ambassador to Bahrain, so I leave it to my colleague in Ankara to address such future questions.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the Jerusalem Post podcast. It's been very interesting, and hopefully there'll be more great Israel-Bahrain cooperation to discuss in the future.
Thank you very much, Lahav.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. You'll catch us next week again with the Jerusalem Post podcast, and you can find us everywhere that podcasts are to be found. We'll see you soon.